Hello, I'm Tim Reynolds. Welcome to the Marriage Challenge podcast, brought to you each month by Care for the Family. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Patrick and Diane Regan, who are going to talk about what happens when life leaves you shaken, and how, as a couple, they've responded to times of grief, illness, and uncertainty. But before we get into all of that, let me introduce them. Patrick and Diane have been married for 19 years. Patrick is founder and CEO of the organisation XLP, a groundbreaking organisation dedicated to creating positive futures for young people. Diane works for Habitat for Humanity, a charity working to help alleviate poverty housing. They have four children and live in southeast London. Patrick and Diane, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
It's good to be here.
Hi.
And we are here in the XLP offices in the very busy central part of London by Liverpool Street Station. So you might hear a little bit of a rumble in the background as the traffic goes by. But I thought as we began, guys, we'd love to know how you first met and eventually got married. So how did that happen?
I think Diane should definitely answer that question.
Well, I used to live overseas and I came back to England and went into sixth form. And so I was the one new person in school and everyone noticed me and I only noticed Patrick. Well, you've got to remember, we were very young. He was 15, I was 16.
In my school uniform.
He was in a school uniform. I wasn't, because I was in sixth form. And we were in the school canteen.
Toy boy.
And am I allowed to say that?
No.
Which bit?
Cuts, next question.
And so you got together and eventually got married a couple of years later, or how did that?
That took a while, you know, and we were so young. So yeah. I was 15, I got married when we were 21, so 6 years later, yeah. Yeah.
So let's look at today's topic, and it's fair to say that it isn't a light one, what happens to you and your marriage when life leaves you shaken. So maybe you could just start with your story from recent years, as I know that you've had to face some incredibly tough times, some of which have been totally unexpected. So tell us a little bit about what's been happening.
So I guess 6 years ago, we went through that sort of one of those seasons in our marriage, in our lives, where everything went wrong at once. You know, it felt like a perfect storm of things going wrong. Kezia, our little girl, got a condition called HSP, where it means she got blotches all over her legs, spots all over her legs, temporary arthritis, and it would last 6 to 8 weeks. And then around the same time, my dad got cancer. He was meant to be in hospital for a week. He was in hospital for 9 weeks and had four operations, lost 3 stone of weight. Diane got pregnant and we were expecting a baby. We lost that after 13 weeks. And I got diagnosed with a degenerative knee condition, which means that I would need to go in hospital and have both my legs broken in 3 places and have a big external frame stuck around it, so 6 sort of pins drilled into my bones. And that would really have to be on for 6 months to a year, and Diane would have to nurse me through that period, and she would have to sort of change the bolts and stretch me effectively. And so it all came at once, I think. And it was a really tough time where we were trying to work out, you know, where was God, what was happening, and our faith was really shaken.
So Dan, with all of this going on, how did you feel? How, as a couple, did you react to these really difficult times all coming at once?
It was very hard. You feel very alone. You feel like the time when you need all the support, you wonder where it is, and it's hard to ask for the support, and it's hard to find it. I remember particularly trying to prepare for when Patrick was going to have his operation, searching and Googling how do you prepare to become a carer, how your relationship's going to change, and actually a lot of my fears were confirmed that it is quite lonely and it is quite a hard thing to do. So, it was all too much, actually. And around the same time, I had to, particularly when it was coming up to the operation time, I was searching for schools for my secondary school, about to approach secondary school for my daughter, and I had to do it all by myself. And it was just, it's a big thing when you're in London, there's so many different schools to choose from, and because I've got 4 children and they were, you know, male and female, I had to get it right, because if I got it right with sibling policy, it was sorted for the next 12 years. And I felt like I had to do it all on my own, and I fell over. I just got to a point where everything was just too overwhelming and too much, and I ended up going to the doctors and getting some medication to help me get through it. Was it the right thing? I don't know. It certainly helped. I needed something, because it just was all too much. It was all too much.
I think your coping mechanism, though, was, in the end, was that sort of image you had of the tunnel, wasn't it?
After being in hospital, and he was brought home in a stretcher and just left on the sofa, couldn't move, was in excruciating pain, and obviously I'd taken some time off work because obviously I needed to look after him, and I had all my four children, and I can't remember the reason why. I think it was suddenly you were coming home and we didn't realise it was going to happen that day, and I just looked at both my parents and your parents because they were there watching the children while I was at hospital, and I said, you're going to have to take the children, we've got to figure this out. And we just had to, the whole house wasn't set up, it was just an absolute eye-opener of how people live with these sorts of situations. So but I remember at one point I just went up to, and I just said, I can't do this. It's almost like a prayer where I just, you know, I cannot do this. This, it was like a tunnel I just saw in the future. It was just a tunnel and everything was black and I couldn't see any hope or sorry, I get a bit emotional. And it was like I almost felt that my coping strategy had to be not to find the end of the tunnel and the light at the end of the tunnel because it's too far away. I had to just look at the now and realise that now there are some good things happening. There are people there. They are supporting. They are helping. I mean, look at my family. They were really good, and Patrick's family. So you don't have to step in and stop me crying, Patrick.
Well, I think it was a sense of light, like the sense we always look for light at the end of the tunnel, which is understandable. But I think what Diane saw in her head was actually there's bits of lights coming in now, and that sense of having to take a day at a time, and almost like...
And sometimes just hour by hour, just getting through that moment, just getting through that moment. Just like him trying to get up the stairs that first day.
We learned a lot about courage and vulnerability, and I remember that particularly, because I think when you have long-term sickness, your world suddenly contracts. It's suddenly a bed, a toilet and the stairs, you know, and you've gone from being able to do everything, and particularly someone like myself, I like to plan, I like to think about strategy and vision. I've been doing a lot in terms of politics and young people and media and stuff. Suddenly that's all taken away from you, and just the simplest tasks. And I remember particularly around the start, we going up the stairs with the frame on was so much pain, and there's this one particular day I got to the top of the stairs after half an hour and I was like, that's it, I've had enough, I'm never coming downstairs ever again for 6 months. And I read this quote and it said that evening that sometimes courage doesn't always roar, sometimes it's a whisper that says, come on, we've got to try again tomorrow. And I think that was that sense of actually trying to find courage and realising that courage and vulnerability are the same thing. It's letting yourself be seen, and which is very different to the sort of heroic courage we often hear about in the media.
And as a husband, obviously, you know, feeling quite self-contained in many ways, you know, you could do things for yourself, and all of a sudden your wife is having to care for you. How did the dynamics change, and, you know, how did you kind of work through that period of your relationship?
For me, I felt really, really guilty, and you know, I've got a friend called Will Vandervaart who talks about the should, I must, I ought. I should be okay, I ought to be better by now, I must be a good husband no matter what. And I think I should, I must, I ought, with those feelings of just pure guilt that I was making Diane tired. You know, Caleb, my little 2-year-old at the time, was a little bit scared of me because it's a horrendous frame. And that, so I think I really had to battle that whole guilt and false guilt scenario, and I felt quite angry at the situation as well, because, you know, my family are incredible and they already made a lot of sacrifices because of my job, and yet here they are making more sacrifices. But through it all, I mean, Diane was incredible. I mean, there were times where, I mean, sleeping with a frame on was a nightmare. Getting up 3 or 4 times a night, I had so many different things strapped to my leg to stop it drooping down, the toes facing me, and all sorts of things. But we worked it through, you know, we did work it through, and it was tough, but I think our relationship was strong.
You get into a routine and a pattern after a while, you then get a bit quicker, and it's like when, I suppose, when you have a newborn baby, everything's just a whole new...
Yeah.
It was a bit like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. And it changes, you know, so like after 6 weeks, I was walking around a bit better, so I slowly got my independence back, but... I guess going through it the first time, you don't know that's going to happen. Mm. You don't know where these stages are. And you go to the consultant and you're like, please give us good news. And I think one of the things we realised was actually dealing with anxiety and every hospital appointment, you have to accept uncertainty. You have to accept the fact that you will never be certain about anything. Mm. And actually that's part of beating anxiety, is to start accepting that fact.
And you wouldn't have asked for any of these things that you were going through together as a couple, as a family, all at once especially. But would you say that there were ways in which these experiences have enriched your relationship, your marriage?
Certainly been tested.
Yeah.
Through the fire.
We're still together.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, it's true.
I think we've learnt a lot, grown up a lot.
I mean, you know, like any married couple, it's about being team, and there are times when you're not team and it doesn't work, and then there are times where, you know, these things force you together. But I think that you learn just the value of family and relationship more than anything else. You know, my mum's a hospice nurse, and she's been one of the longest serving hospice nurses ever. You know, she's just been there for so many years. And she said, when people are dying, all they want is their family. Mm. All they want is their best friends. They don't care about how much money's in the bank. Mm. They don't care about how big their house was. And I guess it's just that actually relationship is the most important thing, investing in that time, you know. And I think the other thing is interesting is that it's amazing when you do get a little bit better, how quickly you get back into bad habits. Mm. Working too hard, not having enough time for each other, not doing the date night thing, you know. Because suddenly life gets busy.
Yeah.
And I think this helps you reevaluate what's really important in life.
Yeah.
Dan, what about couples who are listening and they're going through maybe similar experiences of maybe caring for their spouse or going through a bereavement, maybe a job loss, those challenging times? What advice or encouragement would you give to them?
I would say it's knowing what you need to be able to get through as well. It's important as a couple, but you've also got to recognise your own individual needs as well. Right. And I think, for me, I'm although I might appear like an extrovert, I actually need time by myself sometimes. And so when he had the leg operation, it was very difficult to get time to myself because I couldn't leave him with the children because he couldn't look after them. And equally, I didn't want to get a babysitter in because it would feel really awkward. So it was just, and yet he was always there. And so it was trying to find a place in a space where I could just be me, to just get myself back to where I needed to be, to have the strength and the support. And so I think it's finding what you need to be able to get through and to keep strong.
And what would you do? What recharged you during those times?
I started going swimming.
That was when he got better and I was able to leave him a little bit. There was a window of time where I knew the kids weren't going to be up yet. And and everyone was still in bed, and it was a relatively quiet time. It was about 6 in the morning. I had about an hour. So I'd just escape, and I just went swimming. Mm. And no one could contact me. No one could call me. And I was getting some fitness in to get a bit of energy. Mm. And I had time by myself, and that was lovely.
I think also it is about asking friends and family for help. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes we feel like we're quite independent. We want to do it all by ourselves and stuff. So I think being able to ask for help, I think sometimes we want to be strong, but actually I think strength is about realising your weaknesses and your vulnerability as well.
And I find it really hard asking for help. I'm a very independent, strong person, and like, I've got 4 children, I should be the one who can look up to. It's no one else's fault that I've got this large family and lots of things going on. You know, I should be able to do it. My choice. So for me, I found it very hard to ask for help, but And to know what to ask for was really difficult as well. And people were very kind, but it's just that having to ask for help, and that's a hard thing to do.
Yes.
But yeah, you can't get through these sort of things without the support. You need to ask for support. Another thing I found helpful, a lot of the time when it's just the two of you, it can get quite intense, and it's really important, I think, to have somebody outside of the marriage that you can talk to, and you can just vent exactly how you're feeling without worrying about upsetting or concerning the other person, because there were times where I just felt completely trapped, particularly when he had the leg operation. There were times when I felt completely alone and I didn't feel like I was getting, I wasn't getting the support usually that I would get from him, so I needed somebody else to just stand beside me, for me to just vent it all out and to know I was in a safe place. And this person has to be someone that Patrick would be able to trust me to talk to. It wasn't going to go and publicly air out all my concerns and frustrations, but that was just really good to be able to let it out and be me and not the carer.
Well, thank you both so much for your honesty. I know there are going to be couples listening who will really value this, relate to this. At the end of each podcast, we ask our couples to give us a little bit of a challenge for the month. So do you have something you'd like to ask us to try out?
I mean, I guess just following on from what Diane was saying earlier, it's around maybe finding that one person who you can be really honest with, you know, that an alternative voice, alternative perspective, and actually be really intentional about meeting up with them. You know, whether it's once a fortnight, actually you're going to meet up with them and you're going to be honest, and they're going to create that safe place. And I think that would be absolutely vital. to maintaining a healthy marriage.
And the second thing we came up with too was at the end of the day, just finding something to be thankful for, despite the bad things, the hard times, just to look and find the good things that are still happening.
We often talk about finding the grass growing through the cracks. You know, if you go outside and you look down, you'll see these grey, lifeless concrete slabs looking at you, you know, and sometimes life can feel overwhelming, can't it? It just feels a little bit depressing. Mm. But wherever there's a gap, there's always grass growing through, and you can bend down, you can pick it up, but you'll never take away the root. And I guess we want to be people that don't... We acknowledge the tough stuff, because that's life, you can't get away from it, but also want to be people that have that desire to see the grass growing through the cracks, to see the good things that are going on despite the greyness around us.
So we hope that you will also join in the challenge and try it at home this month, and do drop by the Care for the Family Facebook page and let us know how you got on. Also, a reminder that you can sign up for the Care for the Family Marriage podcast. And when you do, you automatically receive a 20% discount off your next purchase from the Care for the Family shop. So do check that out. Well, that's all for this episode. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to tackling another marriage challenge next time. Goodbye.
You have been listening to the Marriage Challenge podcast. For further information about our courses, resources, and events, please visit us at careforthefamily.org.uk.